Hi, Dave Remmer here. This is, for the record, program number 888. Compendium on Citizen Greenwald, a shiller for killers. This is being recorded on January 31st of the year 2016. If you heard this quote and did not know who the speaker was, who might you think this was? Here's the quote. The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known. Illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, makes a mockery of the rule of law, and is disgraceful just on the basic fairness grounds alone. Unmanageably endless hordes of people pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate, and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate. They are a threat to suburban, middle-class voters. Sounds like Donald Trump, doesn't it? No, that is Glenn Greenwald. And sadly, that is only too characteristic of the real Glenn Greenwald back in the 1950s, or maybe it went on into the early 1960s. There was an old quiz show called What's My Line? And they used to have three people. They would describe what it was that they did, and they would have three contestants, and the panel had to guess. Of course, the audience tries to guess along with them as to which one of the three was the real person. And so I guess in this broadcast, we're going to be taking a look at the real Glenn Greenwald. I've talked about Citizen Greenwald, as I call him, in many programs. He exemplifies, as does Edward Snowden and the other people who figure in this unsavory drama. He epitomizes the quote from Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler's autobiography and political manifesto. Hitler wrote, "Most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts." And what we have been presented with in connection with Glenn Greenwald is a complete reversal of facts. The same for Edward Snowden, and the same basically for Pierre Omidyar, who has funded Glenn Greenwald's journalistic endeavors. In our next program, we're going to do a compendium on Pierre Omidyar as well. Our material on, Edward Snowden is much too voluminous to do a compendium. We are going to update the adventures of A.B. the Friendly Spook. So don't worry, kids. We'll be back with another episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, but that won't be for a couple of weeks. Because the material on Glenn Greenwald has been distributed through a number of different posts and broadcasts done over a considerable period of time, about 2 to 3 years, it may prove somewhat elusive, or the lines of argument and exposition presented about Citizen Greenwald, by the way, a title that is dripping with irony. When I talk about Citizen Greenwald, the lines of discussion and exposition may prove somewhat elusive to many listeners, simply because of the fact that the substantive points of inquiry have been distributed over a number of programs stretching over some time. So I think for that reason, and also in order to solidify our understanding of the reality of Glenn Greenwald, the reality of Edward Snowden, the reality of Pierre Omidyar, also of the WikiLeakers who are inextricably linked with this entire situation, we're going to examine the very disturbing political reality of Glenn Greenwald. And he is the exact opposite of what he has been represented as being. He is not a crusader for human welfare or whistleblowers or anything else. He is the opposite. He, in fact, is, as a title of a Mark Ames post in the Pando, dated as PANDO of July 7th of 2015, a shiller for killers. The actual title of the article is Shillers for Killers. It's about people that have basically collaborated, and people and institutions, by the way, including the ACLU, that have knowingly collaborated with the tobacco industry in their marketing mass murder of millions of people. One of the people who has been a collaborator with the tobacco killers was none other than Glenn Greenwald. By the way, parenthetically, Mark Ames, last name A-M-E-S, has arguably been doing the finest investigative reporting in this country. His work for Pando Daily has just been groundbreaking, and I think it says a lot about this country's journalistic standards that he has not gotten a Pulitzer Prize or a Polk Award that I am aware of, because he has really been moving mountains, in my opinion, although the fact that he has torn down the accepted public facades of people like Glenn Greenwald and others, penetrating to the unsavory and altogether evil reality lying behind that facade, may have something to do with the fact that, and I think I feel safe in calling him this, the heroic Mark Ames has not received the credit he is due. But on this program, by God, he is going to get the credit he is due, and that is considerable. And one of the many articles that he has written, again, from the Pando Daily, July 7th of 2015, Shillers for Killers. And I have obviously borrowed on this for the subtitle of the program, Compendium on Citizen Greenwald, A Shiller for Killers, because he is just that. Now, the article talks about the suppression by the firm Wachtell Lipton of whistleblowers who had gotten a hold of documents from various tobacco companies revealing that the tobacco companies were engaging in aggressive marketing practices in the third world, and that untold numbers of people were going to die or had been dying as a result of marketing their deadly product. Wachtell Lipton managed to squash television coverage of these issues, both 60 Minutes and also ABC TV. And the individual people were blocked, including Walt Bogdanich, B-O-G-D-A-N-I-C-H, and I may be mispronouncing that, were blocked from talking about this years after the leaks first surfaced. The firm that did this was Wachtell Lipton, and one of the young lawyers who worked on the suppression of the whistleblowers was, quote, whistleblower, unquote, or the journalistic leaker for the, quote, whistleblower, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, and this was Glenn Greenwald. We'll talk more about Greenwald's legal career after talking about this. Shillers for Killers by Mark Ames from the Pando Daily of July 7th of 2015. Skipping down between 2005 and 2030, about 176 million people will die from smoking, 77% of them in developing countries, a massive reversal from a few decades earlier. In Russia, smoking rates for men and women tripled in just 15 years from 1985 to 2000 to two-thirds of men and one-third of women. In Mexico, where the richest man in the world and New York Times co-owner Carlos Slim aligned his cigarette empire with that of Philip Morris, 60,000 people die a year from cigarettes. Compare tobacco's legal death toll with their war on illegal drugs death toll, with the war on illegal drugs death toll. A total of 60,000 killed in the six worst years, 2006 to 2012. Of course, that's how many people die of cigarette smoking in Mexico every year. In other words, it took 6 years for the drug war in Mexico to kill as many as legal tobacco kills every year. That drug war is tapering off, while tobacco's legal death toll is set to soar. The ABC TV expose in 1994 on how the tobacco companies were ramping up sales and marketing to vulnerable developing countries was never shown. ABC TV got a box full of secret Brown and Williamson files leaked by whistleblower Merrill M-E-R-R-E-L-L Williams shortly after airing their first controversial show. But thanks to the Philip Morris lawsuit filed by Wachtell Lipton, ABC TV's lawyers panicked and immediately seized all the leaked files from their journalists, seized the copies of those leaked files, seized and impounded their reporters' hard drives, and prohibited their reporters from talking about, quote, the single most important pieces of paper in the history of tobacco versus public health, unquote. When Frontline's Daniel Shore asked one of the ABC TV reporters, Walt Bogdanich, if it was true that ABC had the Brown and Williamson leaks and scoop long before anyone else, Bogdanich, a Pulitzer Prize winner, answered, quote, well, there's a lot I'd like to say about that topic. Unfortunately, I can't. My company has taken the position that no one is to speak about this, and since I work for the company, I've got to respect that, unquote. That was in 1996, meaning Bogdanich was still gagged more than 2 years after receiving the leaks. So it was thanks to Wachtell Lipton's vicious and aggressive lawsuit on behalf of Philip Morris that TV journalism was kneecapped, that 60 Minutes was too frightened to take on tobacco, that a mass American audience never learned of Big Tobacco's plans to bring their mass murder business to the more vulnerable regions of the developing world, and that the biggest whistleblowers of the 1990s were gagged from showing their face or having their name mentioned on the most popular TV show in America, even managing to gag a whistleblower from talking to his own attorney under threat of prison. And this is where the whistleblower irony becomes so dense that it collapses upon itself. Because one of Wachtell Lipton's young associates working on the Philip Morris lawsuit against ABC TV was a lawyer by the name of Glenn Greenwald. We know Greenwald worked at Wachtell Lipton's New York office at the time of Wachtell's lawsuit because Greenwald himself has talked about working for Wachtell beginning in 1993 as a summer associate, then joining out of law school in 1994 and staying on until the end of 1995.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
And the article then goes on to, among other things, describe how, describe a Wall Street Journal article, in fact, excerpt a Wall Street Journal article talking about the problems some law firms were having recruiting young lawyers because of their controversial cases. One of those was Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen, and Katz, and the very fact that they had been representing Philip Morris and other tobacco firms was causing many young lawyers to stay away. That was not, obviously, Glenn Greenwald. And again, as we reflect on Greenwald and his posturing, frankly, as a defender of whistleblowers and a crusader for truth, listen to this, skipping down. It's reasonable to assume Greenwald, ever the diligent researcher, must have joined Wachtell Lipton fully aware that they were helping to gag whistleblowers and threatening journalists. Greenwald says that he chose to work for Wachtell in 1994 after being recruited by over a dozen top law firms. But of course, that doesn't necessarily mean he worked on the Philip Morris case, except that the billing ledger discovered in the tobacco library shows Greenwald's name in a Wachtell Lipton bill to Philip Morris. Other Wachtell Lipton memos show Greenwald's name prominently displayed on the letterhead in aggressive, threatening letters against ABC TV, against whistleblower Jeffrey Wigand, W-I-G-A-N-D, and against whistleblower Merrill Williams. One Wachtell letter to ABC's lawyers with Greenwald's name up top, dated December 14, 1995, warns that Wigand's testimony in a Mississippi tobacco trial is, quote, in direct defiance of a Kentucky court order, unquote, and demands that ABC turn over their sources' private testimony to Wachtell Lipton. The purpose, of course, is to threaten Wigand and ABC and thus to muzzle them. Greenwald's name appears on the Wachtell Lipton letterhead of threatening letter after threatening letter targeting ABC TV and tobacco whistleblowers. While it would be a stretch to say that Greenwald's name appearing on the letterhead of so many Wachtell Philip Morris legal threats means Greenwald was working on that case right up through late 1995, one would have to stretch much further to believe that Greenwald was completely unaware of what his own law firm was doing in the most famous legal case in the country, a case he worked on. The question isn't that young Glenn Greenwald was a named player in the lawsuits which destroyed broadcast TV journalism and gagged the most consequential whistleblowers in history. The question is, why has he never said bleep about Wigand and Merrill Williams? Greenwald styles himself as the most fearless, outspoken defender of whistleblowers today, and yet he has absolutely nothing to say about the most famous whistleblowers of the 1990s, a case he worked on from the other side. Now, of course, once someone hooks up with an organization, there is the old adage, one must go along to get along. And yet, as the article points out, many young lawyers were refusing to go to work for firms that were taking on basically evil clients. He doesn't use those words. And that one of the firms cited in the Wall Street Journal article was Wachtell Lipton, which, because of its representation of the tobacco industry, was having a difficult time getting young lawyers to sign on. Greenwald mentions having been recruited by numerous law firms. He selected this one. And again, one could assume that once he signed on, he was basically obliged to go along to get along. However, when we take a look at Glenn Greenwald's work, once he went into law practice for himself, I think it will provide us with a great deal more ethical and moral depth concerning Glenn Greenwald's true aims and nature. Once Glenn Greenwald went into practice for himself, he specialized in championing what he calls unpopular clients. That is a marvelous euphemism. What among the things he spent most of his time doing once he left big, powerful law firms like Wachtell Lipton, where he worked to suppress whistleblowers, Glenn Greenwald spent years running legal interference for Nazi murderers and doing so pro bono. And as we go through the grim litany of Glenn Greenwald's Nazi clients, and the people that were either badly injured or murdered by those clients. Keep an eye on the anti-immigrant theme. In For the Record 864, one of our interviews with Peter Lavenda, who talked about how, in the conclusion to his book, The Hitler Legacy, he talks about anti-immigrant xenophobia as being part of the Hitler legacy and motivating people to the far right all over the world. We are seeing that now in Europe, Germany in particular. Just take a look at the contemporary GOP primary race. And the anti-immigrant theme is one that one finds throughout white supremacist and Nazi culture. And we're going to see it in the clientele of Glenn Greenwald and the killers for whom he was a shiller. BuzzFeed.com of June 26th of 2013, an article by Jessica Testa, T-E-S-T-A, How Glenn Greenwald Became Glenn Greenwald. Skipping down. Greenwald also spent roughly 5 years defending the First Amendment rights of neo-Nazis, including Matthew Hale, the Pontifex Maximus of the Illinois Church, formerly known as the World Church of the Creator, one whose disciples went on a murderous spree in 1999. I almost always did it pro bono, Greenwald said. I was interested in defending political principles that I believed in. Now, presumably, we are to believe that was, quote, free speech. I want to underscore a point that I made in, For the Record, 856, because this has been badly misinterpreted by many people. When the ACLU, for example, which, by the way, also shilled for big tobacco, as the Mark Ames article points out, when the ACLU, in a very high-profile case, defended the rights of the American Nazi Party to hold a march through Skokie, Illinois, a Chicago suburb with a large Jewish population, that was in defense of free speech. They were defending the right of the American Nazi Party to express unpopular and provocative views. However, what Glenn Greenwald has been doing is defending the right of those same types of elements to advocate violence. That is something very, very different. What had previously been a part of the legal political landscape had been the consideration of suing such groups when their advocacy of doing violence against those whom they disliked could be demonstrated to have helped to motivate violence against some of those people. I would note in this regard that this is not the criminalization of free speech, as some have mistakenly viewed it. It is still legal for them to, and remain legal for them to say such things. However, prior to the activities of Glenn Greenwald specifically running legal interference for the leaderless resistance strategy, they could be held liable for what they did. If I say to somebody, I'm going to beat the fresh fertilizer out of you, that is assault. That's a felony. If I say, I'm going to beat the fresh fertilizer out of you and then touch the person with my finger, that is assault and battery. If one is a homeowner and if you leave a rake on your property with the teeth facing up and somebody steps on it and hurts themselves, you can be sued for negligence. The concept is that people, whether homeowners or people in the arena of political advocacy, are responsible for their actions and for the consequences of their actions. One could say, as, for example, the American Nazi Party has, paraphrasing, that, you know, Jews are the spawn of Satan, or black people are subhumans, or Mexican immigrants are this, that, and the other thing. As distasteful as those things might be to many people, that would be protected free speech. But when you advocate hurting those people, that is not protected free speech. And what Glenn Greenwald did was to run interference for people who did that. And his actions in this regard are very revealing. We're going to talk about a case in which Matthew Hale, a couple of cases in which Glenn Greenwald represented Matthew Hale. One of his followers went on a shooting spree and gunned down African-Americans, Jewish-Americans, and Asian-Americans. Some of the survivors and relatives of the survivors then sued Matthew Hale for basically advocating those types of activities. And Glenn Greenwald had some very interesting things to say and do in a post on the Democratic Underground blog. Glenn Greenwald unethically taped witnesses while working for Matt Hale, white supremacist, and the post is excerpted at length in the description for the program due to the limitations of time. I'm simply going to explain what's there. People can read it for themselves. I found it very interesting that Glenn Greenwald said, quote, "I find that the people behind these lawsuits are truly so odious and repugnant that creates its own motivation for me." Well, I wonder what is so odious and repugnant, the fact that they were African-American, Jewish-American, Asian-American, or that they got in the way of his client's Nazi foot soldiers' bullets. It's an interesting statement, and in light of many of the other things Greenwald has done, I think it raises questions. I should state from at this point, as I have explained in a number of posts and in programs, I suspect very strongly that Glenn Greenwald himself is a spook. I think he is an intelligence officer just like Snowden, probably BND, or perhaps some underground right faction of CIA. I suspect BND. And looking at his CV, I even have a hunch as how he may have been recruited. He studied German in high school. One very common BND recruiting tool is to use German language students as potential recruits. I don't want to be misunderstood saying, oh my God, this person studied German, they must be an agent. Nope. But there are X number of German teachers, German language teachers around the world who do recruiting for BND. And for the record, I strongly suspect that Greenwald is an intelligence officer, a spook of some kind, more than likely BND, or perhaps some underground Reich element of CIA. One of the things that is so interesting in his representation of Matthew Hale in the lawsuit that was filed by the victims of his foot soldier who went on the shooting spree is that Glenn Greenwald unethically taped witnesses, and the judge censured him. He didn't sanction him, but Greenwald was basically surreptitiously taping some of the people that he was interviewing. And that is more than a little interesting. The judge ruled, quoting, "The magistrate judge granted both motions, finding defense counsel's conduct unethical under two separate rules, and prohibiting dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation," unquote, and Local Rule 8354.4 stating, quote, "A lawyer shall not use methods of obtaining evidence that violate the legal rights of person." That, I think, is revealing because we are again to believe that Glenn Greenwald is someone who is, as a matter of doctrine, opposed to the unethical or unlawful interception or use of private communications. And that would appear to be a malleable consideration for Glenn Greenwald. More important, in my opinion, was another case in which a group of white supremacists attacked two Latino day laborers, beating them and stabbing them and critically injuring them. They survived and were able to escape. However, a lawsuit was filed against a number of organizations, including the National Alliance. And that, to me, was very, very interesting indeed. The National Alliance is, of course, the publisher of the Turner Diaries and the book Hunter.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, as we have discussed in past programs, the National Alliance, whose publishing arm, National Vanguard Books, they are the publisher of the Turner Diaries and Hunter, among other books. They specifically publish their books as instructional teachers, instructional vehicles, in order to precipitate exactly the kind of mayhem that their books have led to. And that is very interesting. It is somewhat oblique because these are, quote, novels, unquote. That makes it a little stickier in order to pin them down from a legal standpoint. But William Luther Pierce, the late head of the National Alliance, was very explicit about the fact that he published his books as teaching tools for people to do the kinds of things that his books advocated. One of the books is called Hunter, has been used. It's dedicated to a serial killer named Joseph Paul Franklin. And by the way, I would note that Wesley Glenn Frazier, recently sentenced to death in Missouri for shooting up a Jewish community center and killing several people, was not only a friend of Joseph Paul Franklin, but a Nazi himself. I would note that the Turner Diaries, which is a better-known book, has served as the model for the Oklahoma City bombing and the Nazi terror group The Order in the 1980s, which, among other things, killed Alan Berg, a Denver talk show host. And the National Alliance was among the groups that was sued by the victims of these attacks by Nazi slash white supremacists. And it was one of the groups that was defended by Glenn Greenwald. Salon.com of May 19th, 2007, an article by Eric Bollert, B-O-E-H-L-E-R-T, The Day the Bloggers Won. Speaking of Greenwald, in 2002, he defended a strident anti-immigration group National Alliance in a New York civil rights suit after two Mexican day workers were beaten and stabbed on Long Island by two men posing as contractors in search of day laborers. The victims claimed that the anti-immigration rhetoric of National Alliance, which urged racist violence against Latino immigrants and other racial minorities, was partly to blame for the beatings. Greenwald argued that the case represented a misguided attempt to impose liability and punishment on groups because of their political and religious views. A federal judge threw out the case. That basically is bad law. It's also a misrepresentation here. It's not their views that are the focal point here. It is their advocacy of violence, and the National Alliance does just exactly that. And again, note the anti-immigrant theme of so much of what we are examining here. More, anti-immigrant groups can't be held liable for attack. Associated Press story, this is in the First Amendment Center of September 16th of 2002. Greenwald said about this, "The lawsuit was a very dangerous attempt to start imposing liability and punishment on groups because of their political and religious views. Glenn Greenwald, a Manhattan attorney representing the National Alliance and other groups, was quoted by Newsweek as saying, 'If you can be liable for the actions of other people who hear your views, then you would be afraid to ever express any views that were ever unconventional.' Again, that is wrong, and the judge's ruling was bad law. It's not the views. It's not, Mexicans stink, or the sort of statements that Glenn Greenwald made about unmanageable hordes pouring over the border, blah, blah, blah. That actually would be protected free speech. But it is when you advocate hurting people, that is not protected free speech. And when you put stuff out there in order to have lone wolf, leaderless resistance killers do the kinds of things that Dylann Roof did in South Carolina, that, again, is the leaderless resistance strategy, and Glenn Greenwald ran interference for that. He is a filler for killers. About the National Alliance and their National Vanguard publishing books, History Commons has an article, 1988, Neo-Nazi group funds publishing house, publishes book to inspire white assassins, speaking of William Luther Pierce and the Turner Diaries, and Hunter. He dedicates Hunter to Joseph Paul Franklin, convicted of the sniper murders of two African-American men. Pierce will later tell his biographer that he wrote Hunter as a deliberate motivational tool for assassins, saying, quote, "From the beginning with Hunter, I had this idea of how fiction can work as a teaching tool in mind." In 2002, the Center for New Community will write, "Like the Turner Diaries, the book has inspired several real-life acts of racial terror." You know, if this guy were a Muslim, and if he were, say, Muslim Brotherhood, and by the way, Greenwald has run interference for them, and were advocating this sort of thing, I don't think that I don't think the courts would be nearly as circumspect. More about the advocacy of violence and the National Vanguard. Southern Poverty Law Center Intelligence Reports, issue of fall of 2004, number 115, article by Camille Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N, "The Turner Diaries and Other Racist Novels Inspire Extremist Violence." Few works of fiction have moved readers to action quite like The Turner Diaries. Written under a pseudonym by William Pierce, late founder of the Neo-Nazi National Alliance, parenthetically one of Glenn Greenwald's pro bono clients, the bloody race war novel has been dubbed the Bible of the racist right, unquote, by the FBI. Published in 1978, The Turner Diaries has fueled some of the last two decades' most infamous outbreaks of extremist violence, including Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Mira Federal Building in Oklahoma City. Although The Turner Diaries may be the most famous such novel, it is neither the first nor the last novelized version of Dire Consequences and Drastic Solutions. And again, what the National Alliance is doing with their books is specifically, in effect, it is inciting to riot. They are deliberately motivating people to conduct violent acts against those they consider to be their racial or cultural or religious opponents, simply viewing those people as undesirable or evil or subhuman, and expressing that desire would not be, that would be protected free speech in our country. Europe, for example, most countries that would be illegal, but not here. But when you advocate violence, that is different. If I say to somebody, "I'm going to break your neck," that is a felony. If I say to them, "I'm going to break your neck," and then touch them with one finger, that is assault and battery. And that's basically what they are doing. More about the anti-immigrant theme that runs throughout Greenwald's work and expressions on behalf of Nazis and white supremacists, his Schiller for Killers work. Article in the New Republic of January 19th of 2014 by Sean Wilentz, W-I-L-E-N-T-Z. "Would you feel differently about Snowden, Greenwald, and Assange if you knew what they really thought?" And skipping down. "On certain issues, Greenwald's prose was suffused with right-wing conceits and catchphrases. One example was immigration, on which Greenwald then held surprisingly hard-line views. Quote, 'The parade of evils caused by illegal immigration is widely known,' Greenwald wrote in 2005. The facts to him were indisputable. Quote, 'Illegal immigration wreaks havoc economically, socially, and culturally, makes a mockery of the rule of law, and is disgraceful based just on fairness grounds alone.' Defending the nativist Congressman Tom Tancredo, T-A-N-C-R-E-D-O, from charges of racism, Greenwald wrote of unmanageably endless hordes of people who pour over the border in numbers far too large to assimilate and who consequently have no need, motivation, or ability to assimilate," unquote. those hordes, Greenwald wrote, pose a threat to middle-class suburban voters, unquote. Sound like Donald Trump? Sound like Ted Cruz? Sound like Carl Lundstrom of the Sweden Democrats? Sound like David Duke? Sound like the Pegida Group in Germany? Sound like the Sons of Odin in Finland? Check it out. From Hate Watch of the Southern Poverty Law Center of June 19th of 2012, an article by Ryan Lenz, L-E-N-Z. More along those same lines, and again, note the anti-immigrant theme running throughout. Former Congressman Tancredo to address white supremacists, skipping down. The former Republican congressman from Colorado, known for his biting anti-immigration rhetoric and campaign ads suggesting Latino immigrants are rapists and drug dealers, is scheduled to be the luncheon speaker at next month's annual conference for the White Supremacist Council of Conservative Citizens, or CCC. The theme of the conference, Multiculturalism, the Death of America, unquote. Sharing the dais with Tancredo will be a rogues gallery of the racist right, including James Edwards, who hosts the White Nationalist Political Cesspool radio show, Don Black, the former Klansman best known for creating Stormfront.org, the first major internet hate site, and Leonard Wilson, a longtime segregationist and Alabama commander for the Sons of Confederate Veterans, a neo-Confederate group that, like Tancredo, staunchly opposes immigration. And again, note the continuity between Greenwald's advocacy of these groups and some of Greenwald's own statements and what we are seeing now in connection with what is going on in Europe, what is going on in America, what I have called the perfect Sturm, to update it somewhat. Now, there was a case that came to light in 2013 where a guy named Paul Craig Cobb, you also see him called Craig Cobb, C-O-B-B, began buying up land in a tiny town in North Dakota in order to turn that town called Leith, L-E-I-T-H, pronounced like L-E-E-T-H, into a white supremacist compound. An article describing that is in the description for this program, which will be available later today, that being January 31st of 2016. New York Times, August 29th of 2013, by John Elligon, E-L-I-G-O-N. New Neighbors Agenda, White Power Takeover, unquote. There is a documentary, by the way, called Welcome to Leith, that is available. The guy that was doing that was Paul Craig Cobb, or Craig Cobb. Now, he was a follower of Matthew Hale and the World Church of the Creator. He also was an associate of the National Alliance, or perhaps still is. What we're going to look at here is not only, once again, his focus on illegal immigration and its danger to the white race and so forth, but also his work on behalf of Matthew Hale. Now, Matthew Hale had been in a case, actually a relatively benign one, that was overseen by Judge Joan Lefkow, or Lefkow, L-E-F-K-O-W. It's actually a lawsuit about another group using the same title, and this was not some sort of criminal case. It was a piece of civil litigation. Nonetheless, Matthew Hale grew to hate Judge Lefkow and thought she was biased against him because her husband was Jewish and she had some multiracial children. Now, he had solicited Judge Lefkow's email address, and when he issued basically a call, albeit somewhat oblique, for Judge Lefkow's murder, Paul Cobb posted on the internet Judge Lefkow's address, a map directing people to her home, and photographs of her family members. Subsequently, Judge Lefkow came home from work and found her mother, with whom she lived, or who lived with her, and her husband shot to death in their home.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
From the Wikipedia entry for Craig Cobb. And note, again, the anti-immigrant themes of Cobb and also what he did in connection with Judge Lefkoe. Cobb uses the online pseudonyms No 1965 Chain Immigrants, unquote, on Stormfront, and Chain, unquote, on Podblank, which references to the abolition of the national origins formula in the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965. While his internet activities center upon tireless propaganda, unquote, for Podblank, he is also active in far-right discussion boards where, after the arrest of Matt Hale in 2003 for soliciting the murder of U.S. District Judge Joan Lefkoe, Cobb posted the judge's home address, family photographs, and a map to her house. Lefkoe's husband and mother were subsequently murdered. In reply to a reporter's question, "What were you feeling when the double murder happened?" unquote, Cobb stated, "What was I feeling? Emotions are not yet illegal. I was just fine with it. I think it was well done," unquote. Now, again, that is the leaderless resistance strategy. The Wikipedia entry for Cobb also notes, he attended an invitation-only leadership conference on the National Alliance. So, again, note his association with the National Alliance, publisher Turner Diaries and Hunter, that are intended to motivate racial violence, also represented pro bono by Glenn Greenwald. Note the anti-immigrant theme that will run throughout. And one of the things to note here, before we get to Glenn Greenwald's observations on the case, he represented Matthew Hale in his trial for solicitation of murder. Hale lost. And Greenwald's views are very interesting indeed. Again, we are supposed to believe that Glenn Greenwald is someone who is an advocate for personal privacy and internet freedom and so forth. Apparently, he was not overly concerned about Judge Lefkoe's internet privacy when her address, family members, photographs, and the map to her home were posted. She came home and found her husband and mother shot to death in their home. It's worth noting, too, that no one was ever convicted of the crime. The police, and I believe it was Chicago, have identified a suspect. They were engaged in a car chase. The suspect committed suicide by shooting himself to death. Now, the Turner Diaries, again, are intended as a teaching tool. One of the things that is in the Turner Diaries is a matter of doctrine for the order. That is the Nazi terror group in the Turner Diaries. And at one point, Earl Turner, the protagonist, is taken to task by the leader of the group because he was arrested. What you are supposed to do is to commit suicide so that you cannot be used to incriminate your fellow members. That is exactly what the suspected killer of Judge Lefkoe's family did. He blew his own brains out, so he was never convicted of the crime. So some of the description of the murder of Judge Lefkoe is somewhat oblique. That is exactly the sort of thing that is taught by the Turner Diaries. Oh, by the way, William Luther Pierce in 1998, on a shortwave radio broadcast, he delivered a broadcast called Stay Out of Tall Buildings. And he warned that, quote, people who live in buildings the size of the World Trade Center should consider wearing hard hats because Osama bin Laden is coming and the U.S. would be hit with biological warfare attacks, obviously foreshadowing the September 11th attacks and the anthrax attacks as well, years before they took place. I would note that in the Turner Diaries, one of the things the order does is to bring down the World Trade Center. The climactic episode of the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide attack against the Pentagon, which takes place on the German Day of Destiny. That is November 9th. Hitler's beer hall putsch took place on November 9th. The Kristallnacht pogrom took place on November 9th. Interestingly, the Berlin Wall came down on November 9th. How, of course, would a German or any other European write the date November 9th, 9/11? One can but conclude that the Pirna Diaries have proved to be very effective instructional materials as well. Eventually, Hale was convicted of soliciting Judge Lefkoe's murder, she wasn't killed, her family was. From the profile of Matthew Hale on historycommons.org, skipping down, Cobb was a member of the violent World Church of the Creator until its collapse after its leader, Matthew Hale, was arrested for soliciting the murder of a judge. Cobb posted the name and address of the judge on the internet, which may have led to the murder of her husband and mother. And again, Remo doesn't seem overly concerned about Judge Lefkoe's internet privacy, did he? And in ruling against Hale in this case, where he was represented by Greenwald, this is FBI spokesman Thomas Neer observed, "Certainly freedom of speech and freedom of religion are important in our society here in America, but the threat of physical violence," and that's what Greenwald was running interference for, "will not be tolerated." U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, who prosecuted the case, adds, "Freedom of speech does not include the freedom to solicit murder." That might prove as news to Glenn Greenwald. Again, it's not the political views, it's advocating violence that he was defending them against. And there has been a characteristically addle-brained misunderstanding of that by people who frankly should know better. In the case of Mr. Smith, who was the killer who gunned down a bunch of people as a follower of Matthew Hale, the jury heard audio tapes of Hale laughing about Smith's murders and mocking the victims. The civil suit against Hale by Smith's victims was the first case in which Glenn Greenwald represented Hale pro bono. Anthony Avila, EDOLA, worked as an FBI informant. Skipping down that same entry, Avila provided FBI officials with an email from Hale soliciting Lefkoe's home address. And note that that's exactly what Paul Cobb posted on the internet. And the tape recording of a discussion between the two about Lefkoe's murder. And skipping down, "If you wish to do anything yourself, you can," Avila replied. Consider it done." And Hale responded, "Good." Attorney Glenn Greenwald, representing Hale, says he believes the charge against Hale stems from what he calls a misinterpretation of Hale's statement, quote, "We are in a state of war with Judge Lefkoe." Greenwald says they are probably trying to make things he said along the lines of political advocacy and turn it into a crime. The FBI may have interpreted this protected speech as a threat against a federal judge. I don't know why anybody would think that, right? But it's probably nothing more than some heated rhetoric. During Hale's incarceration, special administrative measures will be imposed to reduce his ability to communicate with his followers. Again, just a little bit more than that. You know, sometimes the bottom line here, people, really isn't all that difficult. It's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or as Jesus is reported to have said, do not do unto others that which is hateful unto you. I wonder if someone basically posted Glenn Greenwald's home address and he came home and found his sexual and romantic partner David Miranda shot to death in his home. I don't think Glenn Greenwald would be all that circumspect under the circumstances. Not at all. Greenwald's association with these type of individuals has continued even after his journalistic beatification. I would note that Greenwald got the Pulitzer Prize, which makes me ill. He got the Polk Award, which makes me ill. Eventually, the documentary Citizen 4 that he made with Laura Poitras about Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden got Best Documentary Oscar. Somebody sent me a CD of that. One of the things that was quite striking was how obviously stage-managed the whole thing was. But I don't know. People in this country have really been dumbed down and really have not looked at this with a very intelligent, critical perspective. The Daily Banter of October 9th of 2014 has an article by Bob Cescorcesca, C-E-S-C-A. And Greenwald has continued to associate with these types of individuals. iPad hacker released from jail, parties with Glenn Greenwald, publishes neo-Nazi screeds. And it's talking about a white hat hacker named Andrew Auernheimer, known online as W-E-E-V. And he was defended by Glenn Greenwald as, again, a crusader for the freedom of information, etc. He then went to prison and was revealed as a neo-Nazi. The conventional wisdom is that he was converted in jail. I think his statements indicate that that may have come long before that. During his time in jail, Weave apparently became a neo-Nazi, complete with a tattoo not unlike Edward Norton's tattoo in American History X, a giant swastika on his right pectoral. After his release, he posted a series of racist and anti-Semitic remarks on a website called the Daily Stormer, a white supremacist site not to be confused with the Daily Caller, the Daily Beast, or the Daily Banter. Here are some choice passages. "I've been a long-time critic of Judaism, black culture, immigration to Western nations, and the media's constant stream of anti-white propaganda. Judge Wiginton was as black as they come. The prosecutor, Zach Intrater, I-N-T-R-A-T-E-R, was a Brooklyn Jew from an old-money New York family. The whole time, a yarmulke-covered audience of Jewry stared at me from the pews of the courtroom. My prosecutor invited his whole synagogue to spectate. They took control of our systems of finance and law. They hyperinflated our currency. They corrupted our daughters and demanded they subject themselves to sex work to feed their families. They are a people that have made themselves a problem in every nation they occupy, including ours. What's saddest is that we are the enablers of this problem. The Jews abused our compassion to build an empire of wickedness, the likes of which the world has never seen." And skipping down. In New York, soon after getting out of jail, he attended a party that was held by none other than Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras to coincide with a ceremony in which the duo received the Polk Award for their reporting on Edward Snowden and the National Security Agency. Unless he crashed the party, I would add that's unlikely. He obviously was an invited guest. Now, normally, one could dismiss that as simply an isolated incident, but note that this fits within a disturbing pattern. And note some of the rhetoric of Auernheimer. "I've been a long-time critic of Judaism, black culture, immigration to Western nations, etc., etc." Another Mark Ains article from May 1st of last year, 2015, Pando Daily, Baltimore and The Walking Dead, talking about the racist newsletters of Ron Paul, Edward Snowden's presidential candidate of choice, skipping down. Beyond that, the Libertarian Party's political solution to African-American poverty and injustice was to abolish all welfare programs, public schools, and anti-discrimination laws like the Civil Rights Act. This was a solution posed by an up-and-coming libertarian, Jacob Hornberger, H-O-R-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, who this week co-hosted an event with Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald. Hornberger believes that 19th-century antebellum slave-era America was the freest society in America. And an article is in the description for the record, 888. From The Intercept of Pierre Omidyar, whom we will talk about in our next program, by Glenn Greenwald and Murtaza Hussein, July 9th of 2014, "Meet the Muslim American Leaders the NBA, the FBI and NSA have been spying on. And many of these are Muslim Brotherhood people associated with not only the Muslim Brotherhood, but Grover Norquist and Operation Green Quest." More about this in our next program. However, we are all out of time. This concludes For the Record 888, a compendium on Citizen Greenwald, a shiller for killers. This has been recorded on January 31st of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.